Welcome to the Wiggly Podcast, dear listener. I'm on my own today in Lower Blakemere on the Wiggly sofa because Farmer Phil is ploughing. But I took the chance to have a cup of tea with him and a little bit of brekkie earlier. And so he's on this week's show and he's going to explain what he's been up to in terms of silage. Now, that might sound a bit boring, but it's not. It's riveting news on hay and silage. Honestly, don't miss this show. There's everything that you could possibly need to know about hay and silage. But first, first of all, we're going to join Rach when she visited the Gambia because it turns out that not only do they compost out there, but they also make bokashi, just like Farmer Phil, who currently has 3 tons on the drying floor and 3 tons ready to bag and 3 tons in bags ready to go on the drying floor. Because lots of people, it turns out, are having bokashi just at the moment. But here we go. Rach, over to you.
We've now travelled up to the north bank side of the Gambia. We travelled over from the ferry from Banjul and where the Gig farm is up to an area which we'll pronounce shortly to the NATC site. And I'm joined by
Seydou Sidibé.
Thank you for that. And he's going to give an explanation of what happens up here, what he does in his role, his job role, and also most importantly, I've found out that they actually produce bokashi here. So he's going to tell us a little bit about bokashi. So, first of all, can we start with a little bit about the NATC compound and what happens here?
Okay, NATC is a training centre, agricultural training centre in North Bank. It has been founded in 1990 as a small community garden. Then after it become a local NGO where they train students, youths and women.
Okay, is that students just from the area of Gambia or students from all over the world? Or
no, only students from North Bank.
From the North Bank of Gambia.
At the beginning, but concern, I suppose, so other local NGOs like St. Joseph's Family Farm and Wazda in Bassi.
Okay.
Then their first batch came at NATC to be trained.
Roughly how many students do you have here at any one time?
It's 20.
They're all farmers? Farmer's sons?
Yeah, you have to be farmer before because you have to get your own garden. You have to start establishing something. Then they encourage you by training and give you a loan to establish your business.
As I said before, I've come to discover that you're using bokashi here. Can you tell me a little bit of how you found out about bokashi, the process, and whether it's out there with the farmers at the moment?
Bokashi has been introduced here, I think, 3 years ago by one lady. She's from Canada, from RIP Canada program. And we got training from her. Then after that training, it was what you call TOT training. She trained us and we have to duplicate the same thing to the farmers on the people in the village. First of all, we need some local material.
Wiggly Wigglers in the UK, yeah. From Farmer Phil, he uses bran. So he sources bran to make his bokashi. So what are you using here?
We use millet waste because you have a lot of millet here and it's free.
Yep.
It's thrown in the field. So you go, you collect it, and you come, you make your fermentation.
Yes.
The fermented liquid. Yeah. And you mix them.
Yeah, and so the fermented liquid, who makes that?
We make it with sugar and some soil from under the trees.
Yeah.
We collect some soil, we put sugar and we leave it a few days, two weeks after in a container. We put water in the container and we hang it under a tree for 2 weeks and you have your solution fermented and you mix with the millet waste.
I know that once you've mixed it with your millet waste, it then goes through a process of kneading. You extract the air from it.
Yeah.
We use a big plastic bag at Wiggly Wigglers, or Farmer Phil uses a big plastic bag. He then sucks out all the air from it, and it remains sealed tight for a little while. I can't remember how long it is, but what do you do?
You use cloth,
You use cloth?
Yeah.
Okay, does that? I thought it needed to be airtight. Surely cloth is not going to make it airtight.
We tie the cloth, we put in the cloth, we tie it, and we soak it in the water.
Okay, and then how long does it stay like that?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
After 2 weeks, you have your solution, and you mix with for the millet waste.
Then
you cover it.
Obviously, it needs to be opened up and dried. How do you dry it here? Do you just lay it out? Because, of course, it's so hot here. Do you just lay it out and it dry it?
No, you know, here, the 9 months in the year, the air is not
humid. Nine months of the year, it's okay.
Yeah,
but the other three, it's just far too humid here to make it.
Like this moment, we don't make it. We stop it because you don't have the material, and also because of the humidity, the rain. So we used to make it during the dry season and keep it for rainy season.
And just for the records, we're here in September, so September is not a good bokashi month.
Yes, from July to September,
we
don't make
it. Don't make it.
Yeah.
No, okay. So we've just come from a gig supplier, not just within walking distance of the NATC site here, and he's been using bokashi on his vegetable patches. And so what are the results that he's getting from using that compared to compost?
Very interesting, because he cultivated 300 meters square for cabbage, and out of this 300 meters, he harvested more than 1 ton of cabbage.
Okay.
That is a good yield in our statistic.
Oh, wow.
Definitely, before he was using compost, maybe he can harvest 500 kilo, maximum 700, 500-700 kilo.
Wow.
From that area.
So it's improved it by about 30%?
Yeah, sometimes you even get 50 to 60%.
Wow.
Yes.
That is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So will you be introducing that to the young farmers that have been trained here at this site to be able to use that method, or is it too advanced at this point for them?
It's not too advanced because, as I said, the compost and the material are not expensive. Everything is free. You make it yourself.
Yeah.
So I think it's not too advanced. It's just to follow a few techniques. And you can make it. But the only problem is here in Africa, it's not easy to break culture. So we train them, we start to introduce, but time to time we have exchange visits between farmers. When they come, a group come, visit a farm with bokashi. At the end, we have some people who start practice the same techniques. And also, at the end, we try to make it and sell it. Some people they don't have time to make it, but they prefer to buy it, and it's cheaper definitely because we sell the kilo at $6. While the chemical fertilizer, the NPK, is sold at $20 per kilo, and more than three times. And definitely the result of the bokashi is better.
So that's really great. This is something that's coming on board slowly, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, while we've been here today at this site, we have also popped out to visit other areas where projects are happening, where they have got lovely gardens from the techniques that are taught here. And the main one that I want to talk about really is composting in those sites, because of course Wiggly Wigglers is renowned for composting and the way that they make compost and the speed that they make it in, because over in the UK it is a little trying making compost. You have to tend to it quite a lot, but you do end up with a beautiful compost from your waste. So can you just explain a compost heap over here and how quick it takes, because it's much better than what we can do?
Definitely. That's why people still now, we cannot push them to go for bokashi, because the compost system is easy. As I say, it's dry. So sometimes, even within 2 weeks, you can get your compost ready.
Yeah.
Maximum 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So with cow dungs and all, but with the chicken, it's a little bit hot. You have to wait until 6 weeks.
Your wife actually makes it with chicken manure, and she was telling me that she has to turn it because it's so hot.
Yeah, what we used to do with the other manure, we turn it every week. But with chicken manure, you have to turn it every 3 days to get a good mixture.
Yeah. With the cow dung, what else are you putting with it to make your compost?
Grass, granular shell.
Yeah. Groundnut is what we call in the UK peanuts.
Yes,
peanuts. So peanut shell is what you're mixing with it as well.
Yeah.
And that makes a great compost. Within what time?
Oh, if you can pound it, that is fast. It's between 2 weeks. But if you don't pound it, the groundnut can stay up to 2 months at the start of the compost. So it's a little bit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think we need to round up there because I think tonight we've got some music happening and some drums banging and all sorts of things. So we're going to be looking forward to that. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks, Rach. Now, for those of you that are always asking me what we record this podcast on, here are your facts. First of all, we've got a new app that's downloaded onto my iPhone today, and it's fantastic. It's called Field Recorder, and it turns out that you can record stuff on your iPhone 4, which is of the sound quality that the BBC local radio stations use. It's in a WAV format or an AIFF format or an MP3. It's in all the formats, so Michael's happy. You can upload it to an FTP server, which we've just kind of got the hang of, but it's a bit slow. Or you can stick it onto your laptop, which I've just managed, which was a miracle. Or you can use some piece of software that uploads it to a website somewhere or other, which we failed to do. But anyway, that's called Field Recorder for your iPhone. It costs a couple of quid, but I think it's probably the best. The reviews say it's the best. Then I'm talking to you today on a Sennheiser, which is a radio mic. Then Michael is sat with his headphones on. He's got a Zoom R16 mixer, which also records. Then the software that he uses to bring these dulcet tones to you is called Sound Studio. And then after that, he makes some RSS feed because he wrote a little thing in Lasso, but you can do that however you want. Then it goes to iTunes and then it lands on your computer. I know nothing else about it. Listen, you're on tenterhooks. I know you are. Because today is when you find out, dear listener, all about hay and silage. Everything you need to know is in this podcast today. And if you think you don't need to know it, you're totally wrong. You trust me, I always tell you when a podcast isn't worth listening to. This one is a corker. Farmer Phil. Farmer Phil, what's going on down on the farm?
Well, thanks to this Indian summer that we're enjoying, we're actually catching up with what we should have been doing in September, and to some extent we're catching up with what we should have been doing back in June, maybe even May, in terms of silage for the cattle or to sell.
Silage you definitely don't make now. Silage, I know, is made when David Roper makes pretty stripes on the field at Stockley Hill, which I would say is around May time.
That's precisely right, or even earlier, but for us it would certainly be then. But what happened was that, if you remember, we had a very dry time back in the spring and the grass stopped growing. And so what we would normally do is graze a number of fields at Campston first, when we first turned the cattle out in April, and then shut them out of it and make hay out of it, usually late June, July time. But this year the grass didn't grow, so there was nothing there. So we didn't mow it then.
But you made hay, because I remember you saying when you make hay, it's going to be really expensive for people to buy.
That's right. Well, we managed because, conversely, the weather was so fantastic at that time. What we would have made as silage, so the first cut on the other fields, we actually took through to make some really good quality hay. Going back to the grass that was supposed to be for hay, there then wasn't anything there, or not much. And so we decided it was pointless mowing that, and also by then the weather had given up and we were into sort of dabbledy times in the middle of harvest.
And basically you make hay for winter feeding of animals because they're inside, and you make silage for the same thing.
Yeah, the difference is that for us hay is cheaper to make, is more saleable, because both these things are cash crops for us.
What's that mean? So you can flog them and get the money?
We sell them for money.
But don't you need it for your
animals?
Well, no,
because we've got all our grass seed straw from here. So that it's a case of growing it. And because that farm is in Wales, which is where all the livestock are, that's where all these things are sold, so that we're that much closer, so there's much less haulage involved. And so having said that we make silage and hay as a cash crop, then deciding which to make depends on how the weather is, so that silage is easier to make because you don't need a long period of very hot, sunny weather, but it's more expensive to make because you've got the extra cost of wrapping it in silage film and the difficulty in handling it, because then you can't puncture the bales, obviously.
So hay is dried grass.
Yeah.
And silage is pickled grass.
Precisely.
So it's the difference between having a dried onion to go on top of your pizza and a pickled onion to go on top of your pizza.
Possibly.
So
whether a cow thinks of it quite like that, I doubt, but anyway.
But surely dried food must be more difficult to digest than pickled food.
Actually, I believe it to be the other way around. I believe that the high dry matter food, so the hay is the highest dry matter, and then you can have degrees of silage. So you can make grass that is nearly hay into really good silage. That is the best silage. But I have reason to think that higher dry matter conserved grass, i.e. closer to hay, reduces the production of methane by the cow, and they digest it better. They're certainly, their guts function better, there's less smell, everything seems to work a lot cleaner.
They must, though, eat the silage quicker than the hay.
No, they'd probably eat the hay quicker than the silage.
Because I was thinking of a cream cracker eating competition that I saw at Abergavenny Food Festival. And you, and strangely, there was a vicar and five people having a world record attempt at eating cream crackers. And for those of listeners who aren't sure what cream crackers are, there's a company called Jacobs that make cream crackers. The crackers are not made of cream. They are made of cardboard or similar.
Or worse, I think.
And I think the idea is that you put cream or something creamy on top of them to be able to get them down. But anyway, they had a cream cracker eating competition, and you had to eat as many as you could in 2 minutes. And I can assure you that there was no saliva left with any of the people after the first two cream crackers. So for a cow...
Well, with a cow, that doesn't seem to be the issue. If you give them the choice between nice sweet hay and silage, I think they'd usually eat the hay.
Yeah.
They seem to like that, and their guts work better in terms of how they act on it. I think probably the best way of thinking of it is how much dry matter, so that the equivalent amount of forage that they eat is the bit that's key. And in silage, because it's usually wetter, your dry matter going into the cow is less. That's the way I look at it.
What's the price of a bale of hay compared to a bale of silage? And do they weigh the... No, they won't weigh the same.
Well, you can say that there's about the same amount of grass in our bales of hay versus a bale of silage. But a bale of hay is worth considerably more than a bale of silage, and it's cost you considerably less to make. Probably less than half the cost to bale a bale of hay.
Because of the wrap?
No wrap, and no cost of wrapping it. But, of course, the reason that silage came into being, particularly baled silage in this part of the world, is because we have a rainfall of getting on for 40 inches.
I know.
That makes some means of conserving the grass that is less weather susceptible quite important, which is why in climates such as ours, round bale silage is actually quite an important way of conserving grass, because bad hay is the worst thing of all.
Yeah, but also doesn't it mean that you can keep your finished product outside, so you don't have to have a barn to keep it in?
Yep, you can do that as well. It has lots of advantages that are weather related, and it also has, particularly baled silage, lots of advantages for small farmers. So if you're a small holder, you can make a few bales of silage. You know, there's no issues where traditionally the dairy herds would have made silage in a big clamp. So you pick the grass up, chop it up and cart it in a clamp and ensile it in one big heap. That obviously isn't practical for a smaller farmer, and nowadays very few farmers actually run their own silage making machinery, so you have to have a contractor and all the rest of it, and that also is an expensive activity.
What was the name for the small farmer again?
I said small farmer or even small holders.
I thought you said small holder.
No, I said...
Because I think the pronunciation is small holder.
Well, whichever way you want to go
you
about
can re-
it.
You can rewind that, dear listener, and see. Because the Gorringes do have a propensity to pronounce the words in the wrong way. So I think you'll find that, in fact, he said small holder, where it should have been small holder.
I would just like to add that Heather is not beyond using completely the wrong word in the wrong place herself.
Is that a malapropism?
No, it's much worse than one of those.
Anyway, Farmer Phil, so we go and we make this hay in the summer, but we've got this grass that hasn't made hay.
So then
what happened next?
We then have a wet summer on our very thin standing hay crop, so the grass starts growing again late. So now we've got this rather strange mixture of an elderly hay crop or an elderly half a hay crop with new grass growth underneath. And we're well on into October and the weather is looking reasonably fair. So we have the opportunity to mow it and make it into
double
silage.
Double your money.
Now, that's good news in several ways, because Wales as a whole is desperately short of forage. So that there's people are doing two things. They're either selling animals left, right and centre. A lot of people are reducing their stock holding rather than having to buy in.
Why are they desperately short of forage if there's this new crop of beautiful green grass?
For us, this was a bonus. For them, they've grazed it.
Ah,
so
yes,
so that because we've got far more grass than we've got animals, it just depends on how much we mow. We're never likely to be without forage ourselves because of the way we are. But for them, they're running their farms stocked with stock. So that once they missed out on
because they can't have a mixed farm.
Because they're up in the hills,
yeah.
And you know they're,
yeah.
they're not going to be arable.
It's not
farms.
The opportunity.
No, and so they grazed their grass to start with. It was dry, so their first cuts of hay or silage were very low, if they took them at all. And they then, you know, lost out. So they're very short. So they got two options. They either buy forage in, which this year is proving expensive, which is, you know, good for me, although I do tend to try and sort of serve regular customers. We iron out the peaks and troughs a bit so that we don't try and shoot the moon, but the price has definitely gone up. Or they're selling stock, which is sad in a way, but, you know, the price of stock is...
But they've got to reduce their...
They reduce their herds.
Really? But that must be really negative, because then they haven't got the income coming from...
Exactly. But they're taking the view that that's cheaper than paying top money for forage. Because remember that for a lot of upland farms, their winter is a long time. It's a lot longer than the lowland farms. They have to bring the stock in and they can't get them out. Not necessarily because of the weather, but because the grass won't start growing until May.
There would be an argument... Well, first of all, there would be the argument that the hills are better without animals.
Well, the hills wouldn't look like they do now without animals.
No.
So that argument is a different thing. It is a traditional conundrum in farming. There's no blame attributed to it. It is just a little sad if you've got your flock of breeding sheep or herd of breeding cattle and you have to reduce it. But having said that, it can be quite an effective means, because you look very hard at those animals which didn't ought to be there. Particularly with sheep, you change your sheep quite regularly. You know, the lifespan of a ewe is not a long time, so that this is the time to look at anything with mastitis and anything with teeth that aren't 100%. You can end up with a much better looking flock of ewes as a result of a winter like this coming, potentially.
It's just the way that it is.
It's just the way that it is. But
so you've gone out.
So we've gone out in the middle of October, which is outrageous time to make
silage. Have you ever done that before?
No.
Ever?
No. I know of a few people who have, but usually the quality of the silage is very second rate because you've
but
got
even
a lot
I
of...
can see that Herefordshire at the moment has got the most gorgeous flush of green grass. It is wonderful with the autumn sunshine.
Well, really.
It looks fabulous.
We've got to now. Now we're in the sort of end of the third week of October, aren't we? And we've had the first proper frosts the last couple of days. Well, to get to the end of October and the trees to be only just starting to turn, is late for us, and that gives lie to the amount of grass that we've got coming. So that's a little bit of a bonus for us, and we've managed to mow some silage. What slightly took us by surprise was that the area we mowed, we thought, might produce a couple of hundred bales, maybe 300 big bales. And we thought that'd be nice, we'll put that in a corner of the yard and that'll sort out one or two customers who we knew had been clamouring for food. But poor old Rob went down there to row up and move the aforementioned silage bales, and by the time they'd finished, they'd got over 700 bales to haul.
So, ka-ching!
So hopefully...
New frock.
Doubtful. New tractor.
New frock.
So hopefully...
Oh, it's so good to finally be able to tell the listener that we've produced something that...
It's nice to be able to work round the weather pattern of the season. At the moment, I'm extremely grateful for October being a reasonably dry month, because otherwise we wouldn't have done any winter planting at all, just because we've got the weather pushed us so late. But this weather is fantastic for the job, and we're cracking on with that. What was interesting, when we were... Campston, for those of you who we haven't sort of mentioned, Campston is a farm just over the border into Wales, and it's 1,000 feet above sea level in the lee of it's called a mountain, but it's really a hill called a Skirrid. And you're on the edge of the Black Mountains, and it's quite a quiet and wild area. And
it's wild and woolly.
And it's close to an even wilder area.
It's nearly gorsy and heathery.
It's certainly up in the air, and when the wind blows and the weather is the weather, it's quite harsh up there. But following the mower, and then subsequently following all the activities thereafter, we've had a pair of red kites, which are the most gorgeous looking things. They are enormous for a start. Next to a buzzard, they look sort of twice the size. And you can tell them because they've got this very marked forked tail. And they fly, their expertise in the wind is second to none. You just see their wings and the tail moving to maintain height and station, and they are absolutely stunning birds to watch and quite rare. We're not very near any of the feeding stations for them, so that they are probably a product of one of the reintroduction programs further up into Wales, and they've moved out into a territory that includes our farm.
What are they after?
Mice. And loads of mice in the bottom of this grass sward, which has sort of been untouched now by anything mechanical that year, and the cattle haven't been in the field since July, so that in this sort of mat of vegetation at the bottom, the mice have had an absolutely fantastic season.
So, without wanting to get too gory, have you baled some?
We probably haven't baled some. Some may have suffered at the hands of the mower, but there would have been plenty of them. You know,
yeah.
They do very well out of that. And, of course, you've had all this time that this habitat is fantastic for the birds of prey, because they will hunt it. So the owls will have done very well out of hunting this peaceful, grassy habitat, having a go at these mice and voles and shrews and whatever else that are living in the bottom. So that, yes, I would concede that mowing it with a mower didn't do them any good, but you've had all the breeding season for them, and the birds, of course, any ground nesting birds have been completely undisturbed. There'll be no eggs or nests or anything now, which is the favourite criticism of silage, of course, because if you go back to March, April time, May perhaps, mowing silage then can be quite damaging, nesting birds within the field.
But that is what it's there for.
That is what it's there for, and I think, as with all these things, it's a balance. But in this case, I can quite honestly say that it's played host to a lot of little mammals through the summer who've had a whale of a time, and knowing their propensity to breed, they no doubt have, and they have fed these kites, they've fed the owls, no doubt, and there have been loads of insects and whatever else to feed everything else off this sort of 70 or 80 acres of grass that's lain peaceful for the summer.
Well, Farmer Phil, I may not have seen you for the last 3 weeks because you've been busy on, so I've caught you over a cup of tea, ching ching.
Mm.
And at least you've had a nice time watching the kites and baling your silage.
I have. I'd better go back to my plough.
See? I told you. I told you you wanted to listen to it. Now you can go into your office at work and you can just blab about hay and silage. You can mention prices, you can mention bales, you can mention wrap, you can mention fodder quality. Everything is there for you. Michael told me to mention that he's got a new computer, that he will be downloading this onto and using this thing to edit it. It's an 8-core Mac Pro with 2 30-inch screens. Good Lord. And he loves it so much, he wants me to share with you that each core has actually got 2 streams, which means he's got 16-somethings running. Oh, love him. What is he like? Do you know, sometimes I have to go around and see his photography lights. Honestly, that is really steady. Bronze colour, that's the type of light. The Rolls Royce of lights. See, it's a good job he doesn't do the content of this show, isn't it? God, that would be really, really steady. I bet he cuts this. Anyway, we would love to have you with us next week because Farmer Phil's talking about all sorts next week and he tells you about bulls and heifers, steers and calves because he's going to clear up a little wiggly HQ mystery. The question came in yesterday. Do we eat cows, heifers, bulls or steers? What is on our plate? Miss Nicole said she doesn't believe we eat bulls, and Mrs. Dowell says she doesn't believe we eat cows. It's all cleared up next week. Hang on to your seats. Go and have a run with Wiggly Wigglers next week and find out what meat you've got on your plate. In the meantime, our latest catalogue was printed last evening on the same press as Vogue. I've told the chap it needs to be Vogue quality, and I am sure it is because he is in his car on his way to the farm at this very moment so that we can get our sticky little fingers on the next Wiggly catalogue. If you'd like one, go online, you can get one there, or email me, Heather at Wiggly Wigglers. Join us on Facebook, just search for Wiggly Wigglers, or Twitter at Farmer Phil without an E or at Wiggled. Love to hear from you. Any questions, let me know. Bye for now. Tune in next week. Then I'm talking to you today on a Sennheiser, or a Sony.